Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
And coming from the Holy Bible, then there were brought unto him little children, that he should put his hands on them and pray. And the disciples rebuked them. But Jesus said, Suffer the little children, and forbid them not to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. And he laid his hands on them and departed thence. And from Khalil Gibran, Prophet on Children. And a woman who held a babe against her bosom said, Speak to us of children. And he said, Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you, for life goes not backward, nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children, as living arrows, are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable. I think that's absolutely beautiful. Today we have the baptism of Aurelia Rose Jones. And so, speaking on parenthood as part of our sadhana, Mother used to say that a mother goes into the jaws of death in order to bring out new life. And it is really true, it's really something to go through all that a woman has to go through in order to bring a new life form into being. And yet, as Gibran says, that child comes not from you, but through you. For each child has a soul, and that soul begins to attach itself to the body even while it's developing itself within the womb of the mother. And as God showed me so clearly at one point, that soul begins to imprint its consciousness upon the body of this newly forming being. And there are so many genetic switches to be thrown. There are so many things to be decided as to how that child will form within the womb of the mother. And as the consciousness imprints itself upon the body begins to conform with the consciousness of that one who will inhabit the body. Master said a surprising thing, at least it was to me at the time, that the very battle for life begins even before birth, that within that tiny developing little body are the competition of many souls to get into that one body, that this earth incarnation is really a rare thing. So that may seem a little bit of a stretch for those who think, well, there are, 6 billion or so bodies that are in this earth. How many souls are trying to get into this earth? And yet, it is said to be true, and it is affirmed by so many of the great ones. In any case, life is precious, and we get thrown into this world, so to speak. And many times we feel ill-equipped to being in this world, and our parents are there for us to help us in every way. First of all, they have to guard our lives. From the very beginning, a human life is unique amongst the animal kingdom in the sense that it's a very long time for that child to be able to stand, to walk, to be able to enable itself to be in this world. And without the parents, without an adult and support in this life, that child literally would not make it. But that with the parents' love, the parents' support, the parents' training, that child comes into this world. And parents aren't given annual reviews, and they're not given annual raises, and they're not given oftentimes lots of pats on the back from society at large. And yet, it is the most important job in this entire world to bring in new souls, to help them to make entry into this world, and to give them everything that they need in order to be successful people as they grow into adulthood. It's a marvelous thing. Now, many times we may get the impression from Master and others who are monks in life that somehow it's a little bit of a second choice to be a parent and to live in this world. But Mother spoke and taught quite differently about it. Being herself a mother and a householder, she held it out and extolled it as the highest way in order to go to God, that it was through her children and through her family that helped to refine her consciousness in order to enter into total and complete God realization. I have said many times that I think of our path as a fourfold path. There are four aspects, major groupings in yoga. And there is the karma yoga. The karma yoga is union with God through activity. And by being a parent and by being a householder, you're learning to be in this world but not of this world. You have a definite role to play. And if you do not play that role, you suffer and the world suffers. When Arjuna stood back on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was thinking of retiring from the field, going to a cave and just living there. He thought the world was just too tough of a place to live. And he didn't want any part of it. And he thought, even spiritually, wouldn't it be a better thing just to retire from this world, not participate in it, just go directly to God consciousness? It's a tempting thought, especially when things are being difficult. When things are going smooth, you know, then we don't mind it so much. But when things are tough, we just want to leave. So we can all identify with that impulse and that thought, and even to cloak it with a little bit of religiosity. Well, it's better for God, it's better for the world, isn't it? Krishna had some firm words for him in that moment, and he said, "No, Arjuna, you were born to perform this very function that stands before you now. And if you do not perform it, not only does it harm your own soul, but it harms the entire world. It has a ripple effect that goes out and out and out. You must fulfill this." And so when we want to retire from this world because we're weary of it and we don't want any more of it, then we must stand firm in that knowledge. We have been born for a purpose, for a reason. When Trailianga Swami paid obeisance to Larimahasya, a householder, Many of the disciples sitting around were completely shocked by this because swamis don't pay obeisance to householders. It's the other way around. And when Lari Mahasaya had left, they asked Trelyanga Swami, "Why did you do that? You, a swami, to a householder?" And he said, "That is a great Baba. That is a great soul. And he has just remained where God has placed him like a little kitten. God put him into the household and he has remained there." We cannot judge this world by all of the things that we like to think we can evaluate. Sometimes we see a soul, and as little children, they come with a lot of, you might say, vim and vinegar. And they have a strong will, and they want what they want, and they want to go in their own direction. And it's a real challenge for the parents. And I oftentimes saw a mother really light up when such a soul came in. I think maybe she identified a little bit with them. And she really loved them. And it wasn't, she wasn't a pushover. She wasn't easy in that sense, in terms of the child just getting their own way. She would see it as the parent's duty to train that child. And they must learn how to be socialized. They must learn how to take direction. And even though Gibran said you may not give them your own thoughts, in a way that's true. Because ultimately, what you're training them to do is to think for themselves and to have the self-discipline in order to be able to think and make good judgments, because there'll be a time when you're not there. And they must form their own ideas. They must be able to enter into life fully and completely. And yet, there's a time for training that child. And when you pick your battles, and you pick a few battles, but when you pick one, you win. No question about it. And the child learns greater security that way. If they're never running up against any limits, then they'll just keep pushing and pushing, and maybe they end up in jail or something worse, because they're always looking for what those limits, those boundaries are. But once they're established, they settle down. And you see that. A child will just push and push and push, and finally the parent sets the limit. And it's a little tough in the beginning, but then the child settles down, and they're much better after that. So it's a strong battlefield that parents enter onto. And it's not like work, where you can go home, and there you can relax, and you have some time off. Your job is always there. And the child, unless they're sleeping, is always there to test you and to bring out the God nature in you. But children will test you in every way. And I know in my own case that, you know, when a child comes into their teens, it was a particularly touchy time. It brought out a great deal of anger in me. And when the child would misbehave, and I had to recognize that's my problem. That's not the child's problem. That's my problem. And I need to learn how to resolve that in myself so that I can go forward. They're revealing something deep in my own conscious mind. And when you see this world, not as something that is just pressing down on you, but is actually revealing the very things deep in your own unconscious mind that you have to resolve within yourself if you are to move forward spiritually, then you can see how vital and how important it is to be involved in being a parent and being involved in this world. Because if you just try to go to a cave, the world will follow you. And I can tell you from spending a year in silence and solitude, the world followed me in. And I had to face everything that I was. And it's not necessarily easier just because you're in silence and solitude. If it's necessary, God will arrange for a time in your life when that's available. And it is true when you can set aside the things of this world, it does allow you to have the time and the focus of attention to go deeper. And that may be a requirement at some time. there are some souls, like Kabir, who simply sat at his weaving, and he was a parent, and he was a householder, and he did it all. And he achieved the highest and complete union that any soul can achieve by fulfilling his duties. Many of the disciples thought that Lari Mahasaya was an incarnation of Kabir. And Kabir was a fascinating individual. It's thought that he was perhaps born genetically as a Hindu and a Brahmin, but that he was adopted through circumstances into a Muslim family, but that he was drawn to both. He used language from Islam, and he also was attracted to the teachings of yoga. And he wanted to find a guru, and there was a great guru that was in Benares, in the city where he lived. And he wanted initiation from him, but he was afraid because he dressed like a Muslim and his background and everything indicated that he's Muslim, that the guru would not accept him. And so he would sit at a distance and he would listen for anything that he would hear from his guru. He had already accepted him as such. But he felt that he wanted to be initiated, and he knew that being touched by the guru was a form of initiation, and so he wanted that touch, but he was afraid to approach him. He saw every day that the guru would go down to the Ganges very early in the morning before there was any sunlight up. And he would take his bath there, and then he would go back to the place where he was camped out. And so he would see where his exact path was, because he followed the same one every day. And he placed himself on the steps, so that when the guru was taking steps down towards the Ganges, he stepped on Kabir. And he was chanting, as usual, his guru was, Ram, 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 Ram. And so as he touched him, and he stepped on him, and he was quite surprised because he hadn't seen him there, and he was chanting, and he said, whoa, what is this? Kabir jumped up, says, you have initiated me. And you have initiated me into Ram, chanting of the name of Ram. And the guru was quite startled by this, but Kabir ran away before he could say a thing. And so it was. And so he started chanting Ram, 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 Ram. And higher and higher and higher he went, and he would weave his cloth, and he would be chanting Ram as he sat at his loom, and weaving and weaving, and weaving into his mind and every thought about his beloved guru and about his beloved name of God, Ram. And he rose so much high into consciousness, and then he wrote beautiful, beautiful songs. And souls began to be attracted to him and drawn to him because he had that honey that was the God realization, the sweetness, the love. But he didn't want anything to do with images of God, and he didn't want anything to do with wandering sadhus that he saw so many of them visiting the city of Benares, which is a pilgrimage city, one of the holiest in all of India. And he saw there hypocrites, he saw there ones who were not getting their realization, and then they would put down others because they weren't leading a sadhu's life, and as if that's the only way to attain the highest realization, and not really doing it. I wanted to read to you from Papa, and this is God Experience, Volume 2. Worship God Within. And a devotee is asking, at what stage are we to stop external worship, Papa? And Papa, a friend complained to Ram Dass, in spite of doing puja, etc., that is, external worship, lighting the candles and incense and all of this in front of the altar, for the last 30 years, my mind is not yet free from vasanas, from the vacillations of the mind, the ups and downs, the worries that come. Ram Dass replied, start manasa, puja. Think of God within you. Leave these external pujas. He stopped them. The hint came to him at the right time. He must have read about it in books, but the time had not come. If you want peace, repeat Ram Nam and worship God in your own heart, Ram Dass had told him long back. But he had no faith. Later on, he felt the need and took the advice. Instead of elaborate puja, he placed some tulsi leaves on the shrine and began to repeat Ram Nam. Then he said, I am finding peace now. He had no attraction for the world. This puja was the one attraction. When that also disappeared, he sat quiet and found peace in the heart. Of his own accord, it was difficult for him to give it up. First, when Ram Dass told him, he did not believe it, because he is so much attached to the external worship. As a result, he obtained things of the world, but peace he could not get. And this is one thing that you notice so much in India, that various ones will come to the Guru, and they want a healing, they want material prosperity, they want so many different things. But it's very rare, actually, for the disciple to come who wants only God and God experience. Continuing with Papa, getting things of the world makes your mind more and more restless. If you want jnana, then worship God in your heart. Take your mind inward. Make it lose itself in your real being through concentration, meditation, and absorption, or samadhi. Sri Ramakrishna was worshipping Kali, but later he would sit silent and lose himself within. Better give up the external worship of your own accord or at the advice of some man of spiritual experience and worship God in your heart. But there is some meaning in the external puja also. You have what is called avasana and visrasana. You superimpose your Atman on the idol for the purpose of puja. Thus you understand that the God you worship is within, and ultimately you give up the external worship. Then you take up manasapusha, or dhyana. Kabir was one who worshipped God within. He had no external form of worship at all from the very start. He reached a high spiritual state. One day, a wandering sadhu came to him. He was also practicing manasa puja. In that puja, all materials of worship are visualized mentally, and this can be done more elaborately and perfectly. You can decorate the image of God within any way you like, with a necklace and other ornaments, all set with the rarest diamonds. You can dress him in very costly silks. In this way, the sadhu, in his meditation, imagined a necklace of precious stones and was trying to put it around the neck of the image, over the head, but the necklace was not big enough. It had a hook which the sadhu did not see. He was struggling. Now Kabir could visualize this. He told the sadhu, "Why do you hesitate? Unhook the necklace and put it around the neck." He did so. He was grateful to Kabir for giving the hint. This story is told about Kabir. Manasa puja is better than the external puja, and ultimately that also must disappear. The object is to realize the Atman. The sooner you do this, the better. You must know he is within you. Now in India, as well as here in the West, there is the worship of God as the child, as the baby. In India, they will worship Krishna as a little tiny baby or as a toddler or a little bit older. And then eventually he goes out with the other boys to help tend the cows. And so there are so many stories and so many ways of thinking about Krishna in these various stages. And when their own child comes along, they will decorate him like Krishna. They will put makeup on him. They will put earrings. They'll put necklace. It's really quite cute. They're cute to start with. And then they put on all these externals, and it's very sweet. And they think of their child as God. At Christmas time, we think of the tiny baby Jesus, and there are many people who become entranced with this little tiny baby, this purity, this light being born into the world. And you love that, and you opens your heart into a greater realm. Now you might say, this is a transition. It's a transition from the human to the divine. Because in the beginning, it's the human, it's that tiny little baby, or it's that toddler, it's that child, that you find so endearing and so lovely. But it's awakening the Atman within you. It's awakening your own inner innocence. And that's why when a child develops its own will and its own desire to go its own way, that can be shocking at first to the mother or the father, because before that, it had just been all total innocence and loveliness and very little of the other kinds of difficulties. But the child is teaching us to, as Mother said, be completely human and divine within ourselves. That inner innocence, that can be awakened inside of us, and also the will inside of us. The will to be a parent, the will to set limits, to be able to guide that child in certain ways. And so that child is awakening both virtues within its parents, the human and the divine. Now, when it's a human only, the parent can get lost and they quit seeing God within the child. But what greater thing can we do for a child than see God within them? This doesn't mean that you give in to everything that they want to do. Yashoda, who was the stepmother of Krishna, she would discipline the child. But sometimes he made it very difficult. One day he was stealing butter, as is wont to do, and the gopinis who are the milkmaids, they would milk the cows, and then they would bring it in, and they would churn the butter. It's a lot of hard work. And then Krishna would come by. He's a naughty little boy. And he would steal the butter. And he'd take it away and he'd pass it out to the monkeys and to his friends. And they get so exasperated with him and they would go to Yashoda. Yashoda, you're Krishna. Your baby is being very naughty. This is what he's doing. You must stop him. We're working very hard and he shouldn't be doing this. So she went to him and she said, Krishna, have you been stealing the butter? And he shook his head, no. And she could see that he had just taken a big scoop out of it and put it into his mouth. She said, show me, open your mouth. And when he opened his mouth, she saw the entire universe inside of his mouth. So she couldn't say anything to him then. So he is a naughty baby who got away with it. Another time he is being very naughty. And she thought, oh, you're so naughty and I'm so tired of all of this. I'm going to tie you to this table. And it was a big, strong table. And so she took some twine. She tied it around his ankle and then she went to tie it around the table. Oh, she's just short. She was quite sure she had enough twine, but she was just short of being able to wrap it around. So the leg of the table. So she got another length of twine and she tied those two together. Well, once again, she was just a little bit short of being able to reach the table leg. So she got some more and she got some more and she kept on adding and adding and adding so many times and she never reached the table. And finally, sweat was coming down, her hair was all disheveled, and she looked at him so exasperated. And when he saw his mother so all undone by all of this, he just gave the sweetest little smile. And then she found that she could easily had enough twine to bring it and tie it to the leg of the table. So these are lovely, lovely stories that people love to hear. And there are times when people have these stories and these times and tears will just run down their eyes. When we were at Anandashram, there was Mansi and Lakshmi. And now she is Swami Mayatreya and Lakshmi goes by Gargi. Those are names that Swami Satchidananda gave to them. And so they gave these names, and they had this little baby Krishna it was a doll. And they loved to dress up this little Krishna, and they would just treat it, and they had so much love and devotion for it. And they just would go on and on and on. And we went over and they told many lovely stories about not only their experiences with Krishna, but different stories about Krishna. And they were just enraptured with this image. And it can seem like a strange thing that there would be so much love, so much adoration that would be focused on this little doll. But that's the way that they felt. And then at one point, they said that Krishna said it was time for him to leave. And they gave this little image of Krishna to someone else, and off of it went. And they always had in mind that ultimately they would find that image of God right within their own hearts and right in their own souls. But this is a play that was enacted for some time. So when you see your children as images of the divine, you see them as having that sacred presence within them. You see the God within them, and perhaps you relate to some of these stories around Krishna or around Jesus or others, and it helps to awaken that divine nature within your own self. And in this way, your very own parenthood and all the trials and all the joys and everything that you go through is all helping to awaken God within you. And that's the whole point, isn't it? If you just get relegated to this material plane, then that's what you continue to get. But if you work to elevate your mind, your attention, and you see not only the human, but you also see the divine, and you love the divine within your child, and you just think of the power of thought, the power of spirit, and by loving God within, it's very easy, especially when you're exasperated or it's difficult, to get caught up in the human only. But that when you combine it with the divine, you begin to purify your mind and lift it up to a higher consciousness. A funny story that happened with Mother when she was at the ashram in 1957 and 58, when she and her husband were there, and their adult daughter was due to be pregnant. It was probably took a certain amount of surrender to leave and go to India at that time if they knew that their daughter was pregnant and they had a grandchild on the way. But anyway, they were waiting to hear. They knew that the time of birth was coming very close. And then they were given notice by a runner who came to their room and said they had a telegram and that they should come to Papa and they would be able to see the telegram. And so when they got to Papa, Papa's feet were dancing up and down. He had big smiles, and he says, "It's a boy, it's a boy." Ram Dass couldn't wait. He had to open the telegram first. Isn't that so sweet? And from somebody who's a complete and total renunciant. And so the love is there, you see, and the joy, and the ability to bring in new souls. What a tremendous privilege that is. Tremendous privilege. If it wasn't for our own parents, our own mothers, who went into the jaws of death in order to bring out life, if it wasn't for our own parents who worked hard to provide for us, now parents fall short of lofty goals in many, many ways. But still we can have gratitude for what they did give us, and if nothing else, they did give us life. An opportunity to grow, an opportunity to work out our karma on this material plane, an opportunity to become better people. And as a result of that, that we can grow spiritually. This is a great, great gift, you see. And if they don't even live up to the rest of it, they've given us at least that. And so we can give gratitude. We can give love. We can give thankfulness. And we can also recognize that parenthood, when it's done in the highest and the best light, helps to elevate us, help to lift us up. And sometimes, many times, by us having to face our own limitations, our own challenges, and this is the very way that you are helped to grow spiritually. It can seem like it's the opposite because it takes us more into the world. But it's all about learning self-mastery. And when you learn to master yourself in all situations, then you can choose where to put your attention. And when you put your attention upon God first, and as Jesus said, that think of God and His heaven first, and then all of these other things will be added unto you, then you are enabled to do absolutely everything else in this world. Now that means as parents, in our work life, in our social life, at all times and all places, we learn to put our attention on God first. And what happens as a result of that? We become free of the things that in the past have bound us. We begin to feel a kind of peace, a peace that surpasses all understanding, because it's not based upon outer circumstances, but upon an inner spirit that is arising within us. And you are lifted up in consciousness, and you transcend this world, and yet, oddly enough, you are intimately tied with this world. Because God is the sole creator of everything that is, and therefore everything that is made up of God stuff. If you are one with God, then you are one with everything that is. Master wrote a beautiful poem in which he talked about he was the grass upon which people walked. He was the flower that was displaying its beauty and fragrance. He was all of these things that were part of all of nature. And he identified with them. He felt one with them. Now, this happens beyond just even our own imagination, but it becomes a spiritual experience. And we feel ourselves one with the child or children. And yet, we are beyond that because we are also eternal spirit. And that is what gives us freedom, even while we are in this world, so that we can be in this world but not of this world. That is what it means. That there is a spiritual consciousness that resides beyond this world. And yet we can participate fully in this world as anybody else can. And this is our ideal. This is what we're striving for. And this is what our families and our children have come to us to help teach us when we take it from the right perspective. So as Papa says here, in the beginning you can use images, but later it awakens the divine reality within you, which takes you beyond images, takes you beyond time and space. The atom, and even the sound of vibration of Om, that takes you all the way into that pure spiritual radiance. So let us enter into this world with a brand new spirit, in a brand new way, a way to achieve our own freedom. And let us not blame the world for being the way the world is. It is exactly perfect for us. Even when it dashes our dreams, even when it seems to crucify us, nevertheless, it is all working to take us into that highest spiritual realm. And when you take it as that way, it lifts you up beyond the externals and lifts you into the eternal.